Assertiveness is an act of lessening the divide between what's on the inner and the outer life. Because the life that is inside needs to be heard on the outside. Here's how. There are three strategies that you could take about becoming more assertive. The first is asking the question, what do I really want? What do I really like? At any given point in time, we live in two worlds, one on the inside and one on the outside. And our task is to learn to tune in on what's not just asking us on the outside, but what's quietly beckoning on the inside. Learning to ask that question, what do I really want? Is a really simple but deceptive question. You could go further and think about, actually, what do I really like? Art offers us that sort of chance. When we look at a piece of aesthetic art, be it a painting, a sculpture, or listen to a piece of music, it beckons us about what kind of feelings that elicit within us on the inside, and what do we really like? What we like is idiosyncratic, that's specific to our tastes. And I would suggest for this question, for you to write this out, to just write as a header in your journal, and to try and answer these questions. What do I really like? What do I really want? What do I need that's missing in my life? And if you find that difficult to answer, stay with it and come back to it. Give yourself some spaciousness to work through this question as well, or come back to it another day. Another way to think about this is to invert it. Ask the question, what makes me angry? What makes me upset? What pisses me off? Our anger gives a hint. It's not the end route, but it's the beginning sign to tell you about some things that you really care about, and allows you to voice what is on the inside and find a way to exist on the outside. Let me give you an example. Recently, my wife was sort of upset whenever she goes to the kitchen and she's looking in the dishwasher, and I couldn't bear the kind of look that she has. And I was asking, what was it? What's happening? What's making her a little bit upset? And she didn't want to say anything about this because I think she didn't want to make a big deal out of something small, I guess. But at the end, she told me, she said that it was the way that I laid out stuff in the dishwasher. And I asked, what about it? And she said that, could you just put all the spoons one side and all the fork on the other, so that when we grab it, it would be easier to put it back into the shelf. And you know what? I thought it was a brilliant idea, because I didn't really think too much about these sort of things. And she expressed that matters. And, you know, it makes perfect sense. I'm happy to do it. I think it's really important that we find a way to speak what's on the inside to the outside. That's so fundamental about assertiveness, because assertiveness is not just being abrasive and upfront, but it's really about figuring out a way to speak what's on the inside to the person on the outside, that they can receive, they can hear and receive you, and not just hear you yelling at them, that makes sense to them. Here's the second strategy. Practice using your no's. I don't mean N-O-S-E, I mean yes and no, N-O. This idea originated from entrepreneur and brilliant writer Derek Sivers when he had a chapter called Hell Yeah or No, Hell Yes or No in his book Anything You Want. And I thought it was a brilliant rule to have. But of course, this is not a universal rule. It's something that you use when you are overcommitted or you're too scattered. And you got to learn to practice to say no in general, and only when something is hell yes, then you would say yes. If not, all else is defaulting to a no. Saying no is hard. Increase autonomy by learning to say no. And this is hard because it feels like we are letting other people down. Many of us would rather suffer on the inside than disappoint others. In the past, I kept taking on project after project, even though I was already doing 100% things over the brim. And why did I do that? The explanation in my head went like this. I think I can work on this for a few evenings after I put the kids to bed and maybe wake up at 6 a.m. to finish up. Yeah, it's doable. Despite not being employed in the halls of academia, which meant that I had no incentive to publish peer review articles, I would take on research studies, sign up for extracurricular activities outside of my role as a clinician in the hospital, and often say yes to reviewing studies as a peer reviewer, even though I really didn't have the bandwidth to do so. Apart from my wife, no one else knew I was suffering because of these yeses. Here are some more examples of the narratives I used to convince myself. This would be a good opportunity for me to get more exposure to this particular clinical research. This would help me build a name for myself. Or this would be good for learning more about how organizations operate. And one of the biggest kicker was, what if I miss this chance and is not going to come back again? Even though my rationale was meant to be self-beneficial, this led me to burnout. More on this about burnout in HomeKit in the other section. The only way I could turn things around was to base my decisions not on the potential of benefit, but on autonomy. Given the lessons learned, as I operate from a place of autonomy, my default answer to new projects is a no, even if the benefits seem enticing. The shift from benefit to autonomy means that I now anchor myself on things that can increase my sense of agency and control of my life. This means that I have to not just go with what might be useful, beneficial, or even helpful, but also be governed by a different principle, one that is about enacting true choices. In order to exercise true choices, we have to learn to make big decisions to avoid small decisions. Moving our thinking from benefit to a real consideration of autonomy isn't so straightforward. In order to make difficult things easier, adopt that principle of making a big decision so as to avoid small decisions. If someone invites you to a gathering that you aren't actually 100% keen to attend, and you already have 19 other big commitments and deadlines tied down for the next 8 weeks, say a gracious no. If someone at work gives you a perfect project opportunity that might even lead to a promotion in the near future, but you actually only have 5% interest in the project and the potential role, bravely give a kind no. Instead of saying a hesitant yes and then regretting it later on, consider some variant of the following responses. Thanks for thinking of me. At the moment, I'll have to turn down the invite, but if things change in the next few weeks, I will definitely give you a call. I will let you know. At the outset, instead of being confronted with the in-the-moment small decisions or even the pressure to say yes, make a pre-decision to say no. Your yeses depend on your no's. The ability to make a big decision up front by saying no requires you to know what we've talked about in the first strategy, which is what you really want and what is important to you. And if you are often put on the spot and have difficulties defaulting to a no, buy some time. Say to the other person, let me get back to you so that you can think through it clearly in your own time. The third and final strategy on assertiveness is the practice of strength and warmth. Think of strength and warmth like a hydraulic system. When one goes up, the other goes down. When strength goes up, warmth goes down. When warmth goes up, strength goes down. Nearly everything you do to increase your strength diminishes your warmth, and vice versa. So in each context, you have to exercise your choice between these two factors. Meaning to say, more concretely, when is a moment where you should be more warmth and agreeable and to just go with the flow? Or when are the other moments where you need to speak up, even though you might not be agreeing with the majority? We become more compelling to others when we know when to keep an open heart and when to keep a strong spine. This differentiation is important because that really helps us to be less divided when we know when we need to stand firm and when are some things we just need to be more agreeable and to go with the flow. Struggle for most people who have difficulty with asserting themselves is often the issue of when to bring the hydraulic system up for strength. So that's something that you need to practice and to use. Now that we have talked about the three strategies for assertiveness, that is, what do I really want? What do I really like? Answering those questions. Second is making a differentiation between what's a hell yeah and the rest is a no. And the third one is about the difference between strength and warmth, treating those like a hydraulic system when you use them. Now we can go into the reasons behind why all these works. And here's why. The first one. Assertiveness is a form of truth-telling. Make sure when you say yes on the outside is not a no on the inside. I mean, this might sound strange to some, but deeply conflicting to others. This benign question that we sort of asked earlier about what do we really want is really tricky. See, what do we really want speaks on desire. And desire is the seed of knowing, deeply rooted in our psyche. Especially when you're at significant transitions in your life, such periods hint at not only what you like, but also who you're going to become. For instance, a person who decides to leave a high-paying job in his 40s because he can no longer work in a place that violates his values about the environment and how to treat people, now has to recalibrate in a new direction. If he stayed at his previous job, even though it paid well, the ongoing moral injury would likely inflict psychological symptoms like depression, anxiety, insomnia, and feelings of overwhelm and even alienation. So at first blush, the question of what do I really want sounds highly indulgent, but affording ourselves the chance to carefully reflect on it can lead to deep reckoning, which is why I was recommending that you write down these responses in your journal. And what we have to reckon with is the idiosyncratic particularities of what makes us as individuals come alive. Your biggest need is to figure out what you really want. If you don't know what you really want, it's really hard to be assertive in your life. The second point is to be divided no more, and here's why. When you go against what you stand for, you violate an integral part of yourself. This type of moral wounding eats at you. Even when you think you have sufficiently distracted yourself and gotten those negative thoughts out of your mind, the inner division festers. Quaker author Parker Palmer notes in his book, A Hidden Wholeness, dividedness is a personal pathology. The divided life at bottom is not a failure of ethics. It is a failure of human wholeness. Wholeness, by my estimation, is not some fluffy New Age concept. To go against what is a no for you on the inside and saying yes on the outside creates what Parker would call a divided life. This division not only affects individuals personally, but it also impacts others around you. When your yeses and nos are not aligned with your inner and outer life, people around you are not getting a chance to really know you. What they experience of you is only a veneer then. The last point about why this is important, and particularly saying yeses and nos and to make the differentiation between strength and warmth, is particularly difficult for people who are highly agreeable. That is, they are more compassionate and polite. And if you look at one of the more grounded research in human personality and the Big Five, you could remember the Big Five in terms of these five factors: openness to experience, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. And just briefly, let me explain each of them, and I'll go down to the one that's particular for us here. O for openness means how much are you open to ideas or ecstatics or stuff that's intellectually challenging. C for conscientiousness means how organized and methodical a person are you. E for extroversion, that's somebody who gains positive emotions and energy being with people, especially. And the opposite of that is introversion, which is where you gain more energy being in solitude. And N for neuroticism, which means proneness to negative emotions. But specifically to our discussion here, A is for agreeableness. People who are highly agreeable are generally very nice to be with because they are not only polite, but they are compassionate, they are very empathic and warmth to people. So they are very nice people to be around with. They're always considering other people. In fact, sometimes to the detriment of themselves. This is why people high in agreeableness have more difficulty exercising assertiveness. This is where the particular strategy of differentiating between strength and warmth is really going to play out, where you need to make decisions where, in specific contexts, where you need to carry on to be warmth, polite, and nice to others, and others where you have to learn to assert your strength, to speak up. You don't have to raise your volume, but you do need your voice to come out from the inside to the outside, to allow it some space to be aired, to be shared.